tall.
It's got a little bit of a good guitar there to the background, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. The greatest thing I've ever accomplished in my entire 35-week broadcast career is I have my own theme song. It doesn't matter if anyone listens anymore. Nice. I don't care. It's I have my own theme song.
Do you ever play it while you're walking down the street?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just,
Peter Griffin moment.
It's the ringtone for everyone on my phone just so I can hear it a lot.
You know you've accomplished it when you hear somebody, like one of your kids or your spouse, who's humming it, and you say, hey, what is that you're humming? And they say, I don't know. And you're like, it's my podcast themes. I caught my husband humming mine once.
I had a complete stranger in a bar come up and say, hey, I've only watched your show once, but I really like the song. And I thought, well, that's like the ultimate infectious marketing right there. Right? Mm. Anyway, welcome to Web Only Wednesdays on Cody Talks. We had a little bit of a change of plans here because of some confusion. Some of you may have seen that I posted a different show subject. It didn't work out because of phone issues, and I went into complete panic mode, walked out into the nearest room and said, hey, does anyone want to be on the show for about 15 or 20 minutes? So we're here live with Kevin and Ginger. Two people that have been on the list of wanting to have on the show for quite a while now. Two people that I highly respect in, I'll definitely say I respect immensely both of your guys' passion about what you're passionate about. I think you could overall umbrella that with education. And then I think it very much with you two gets into even more specific niches, and your level of passion increases as you drop down into those niches. Is that a fair statement about both of you?
Quite fair.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's a nice overall statement.
Kevin, now we can't get the phone to work when we want it, and then it rings when we don't. Kevin, had the urge to speak in a British accent for the whole interview. Feel free.
Thank you.
Just cut loose.
No one ever lets me do that.
No, absolutely. Kevin is from Inman, Kansas, but is going to do the next 15 to 25 minutes completely in a British accent.
Nice.
You told me to name the show Chicken Glasses, and I just do what I'm told. I mean, my name's on the show, but I basically just do what I'm told. Minus the phone issues around here. Why did we name the show Chicken Glasses? Tell me.
Okay, so I'm going to pitch to Ginger because she brought this whole thing to my consciousness.
So I'm watching an episode of Storage Wars, and I think that it's an interesting show because the guys, the women on there, they've got this killer instinct, you know, it's to win and win at all costs. And I don't know, that there's a piece of me that appeals to. So, watching it, and there's one of the guys on there, Barry Weiss, kind of a quirky fella, runs into these chicken glasses. He doesn't know what they are. They're little tiny things, little, look like sunglasses, but he doesn't know. He takes them to an expert and they say the chickens wear them, because, or they did in the early 1900s, farmers put them on the chickens because the red lenses of them would keep them from picking on other chickens, because the red in the lenses would mask the color of blood on other chickens. I thought that was really cool, very interesting. I thought, man, because, you know, I'm kind of a farmer girl at heart from a long time ago. So I was talking to Kevin about this one day, and he did what Kevin does, which is explodes his mind and mine. So, Kevin.
Okay, so, you know, I talk about bullying in schools all over the country and around the world. I talk to hundreds of thousands of kids, sometimes in a year, about bullying and not bullying and cyberbullying, and I have a curriculum that's been developed. But then Ginger brings this to me, and we go and look at the newsreel on YouTube. And if you look up Chicken Glasses on YouTube, you'll find it. You must watch it. It's worth watching. By the way, thank you for letting me be decidedly English. I appreciate that. So anyway.
I like the sliding geography of that English, too.
Thank you. I'm trying to represent everyone
all
there.
Sorts of
estuary English and everywhere else. Okay, so anyway, this idea fascinated me because I thought, okay, so what's about lenses, right? It's about chickens can't see blood, therefore they don't attack. So kids attack one another. They attack what they see as weakness or difference, right? So in school, we're all homogenized. Don't dare be different or we'll all attack you. And kids start doing this in preschool. It's an animalistic behavior, and we might as well admit it happens, right? But we're not proactive. We don't say what not to do. We bring in a specialist with a puppet to talk once a year and hopefully we fix everything. We talk about character ed and these things. But I think, and we think, that it should be part of daily culture in school not to attack. So this simple idea, this simple story, this narrative about, and we're working on this right now, a children's book. So this little chick sees all these other chicks and sees them attack each other. That one has a different feather. Everyone attacks. That one has, you know, looks different, walks different, seems different, clucks different, and so they all attack. And what this little chicken sees is that, this little poult, if you will, is that when they put the lenses on, everyone's nice to each other because they see through lenses. And then hopefully to move this whole conversation over to the kids need lenses. Right now they don't have any, so the only one they have is the one we teach them. These are the things that we want in school. Everything else is different or exception. And if you work with exceptional children or populations, special ed, kids who are going to be different just by design, right? We've seen that they get precluded, they get attacked, and because I believe we don't teach lenses. So the idea here is that take this simple idea of chicken glasses that sticks in your mind once you hear it. I bet a bunch of you are listening to this. You've already Googled it. You've already been on YouTube and you've watched that newsreel.
I love it. How does the practicality of translating it to human beings happen?
Well, because I think in our schools, the culture right now, and has been for a while, is to make kids stronger. And so in order to do that, what we have done is we've pointed out where you're not fitting in, where you're not with the norm, where you're weak, where you're slow, where you are wrong, because that's what our schools are about, is by helping kids learn, we show them where they're wrong so that they can learn. I'm not sure that that's probably a really healthy place to go. I wonder sometimes if that doesn't lead to a culture of, oh, that kid's dumb, that kid's slow, that kid's different. And by the very structure of how we operate things, we're creating bullies.
No, I think I first of all, I have zero expertise on the matter other than being part of the human race. That's my label of expertise on the matter of bullying. But I want to throw out, and I hope it ties into the topic and doesn't divert the topic, because I've had the urge for a year now probably to have a bullying discussion with you two, who, you know, I'm around both of you somewhat during our regular work week. And I feel like that, and this is going to sound harsh, but there's an asterisk at the end, okay?
I'm all about wrestling with ideas. Do it.
I think part of the issue with bullying is it seems to me like so much of our efforts are focused on stopping the bully from bullying. And the asterisk is, by no means do I think that's a bad idea. I think we should 100% be focused on reducing the amount of bullying that happens. I think a possible additional solution that I don't see dealt with very much, again, I'm not an expert, I'm not in it, maybe I just don't see it, is teaching the recipient of the bullying not to change. If the thing that they're doing that's getting them bullied, I'm not asking them to change and fit into the norm. I don't know, are we doing the things, the coping mechanisms with them? Because, you know, there's the whole bullying is a lot less effective if it doesn't bother the kid being bullied. Does it make sense what I'm trying to say?
It does make sense.
I'm so scared that I'm coming across as, we just got to tell these kids to toughen up. How I'm coming across, but it really seems to me like we lack any type of initiative on helping kids dealing with it. Because in the long run, I think that cavemen kids probably did some bullying. We're never going to eliminate it. And that doesn't mean we quit trying to lessen the amount that it happens.
Do you feel like you're on a knife edge here?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm also very passionate about the fact that I think when bullying happens in the school, the kid that did the bullying is brought to the principal's office and punished. He suffers and is involved in the solution to the process. I sometimes really wonder if we don't need to be spending just as much time helping develop coping mechanisms, which in turn reduces the effectiveness of the bullying in the bully's mind, right?
Let's step back from this just a little bit, and I have to insert a partner here, Tamara Conradi, who I've worked with for years and years. And I'm going to leave the English accent because it feels disingenuous. This is a pretty serious conversation. She was a school administrator, and now she works with curriculum specialists here at SDEC, and she's passionate about this issue too. And so what's fun about having a conversation with Ginger and Tamara is we have a more holistic conversation about a bigger issue like school culture. So what I think you're alluding to there is survival skills on the half of the victim, and don't bully, we tell the would-be bully. I think stepping back from that further, the conversations I've had with these two ladies is that how do you build a culture that just doesn't invite these types of behaviors, that some from the get-go is about acceptance and is about valuing everyone, no matter how they look. Because if you don't do that, you're killing every would-be Steve Jobs and every would-be Bill Gates. And I tell people this all the time. If you ask some of the most innovative people in the world what their school experience is like, it's usually terrible in their autobiography. And you think, oh, my God, so Edison, Einstein, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates all barely survived school but did. How many don't? So when will we build a culture that's not so fixated on test scores, you know what I mean, and measures of success that don't have anything to do with personal? We're people. It is personal. Everything that happens in a kid's experience is personal. When you put your first time you put your kid on a school bus and sent them to school, I bet you hoped to God she'd come home happy. I bet you never thought for a minute she'd come home crying. And we have this thing in public education called custodial care. I'm in charge of your kid legally all day. Anything happens to her, it's my fault. So we keep her safe. Well, she's not going to get her nose broke. She's not going to die. And, you know, but that's it. That's the whole thing. What if she felt good about herself? What if, even though she's weird and she wears princess dresses to preschool and no other girl does, are we going to let her get destroyed for that? Or are we going to let the little artist in her live another couple of years until she incorporates it into her writing? You know what I mean? I think we've got to broaden the way we see school culture and make more room for more kinds of people. You know what I mean?
And to tie on to that, I believe that that kid who comes in their princess costume may look a little funny, looks a little weird. Some of us may say, wow. Or the kid who doesn't quite have all the social skills yet and so makes those gaffes. They have strengths. They have strengths that we should learn to appreciate. And in our culture right now, where things are, you're wrong, where you're weak, where you're sad, where you're, we're not taking the time to appreciate everybody's individual strengths. Every single one of us, whether we intend to or not, have been a bully at one time or another. Some of us intend to, and some of us don't even recognize we're doing that. And most of it happens because, have you ever been in a situation where you felt uncomfortable, and so you attacked before you got attacked?
Preemptive strike.
Absolutely.
And so we're creating that environment with our in our schools. And I think we have some pretty solid ideas on how to shift that culture, but it's a big thing. It's not like Kevin was saying early. It's not where you come in and a motivational speaker talks to your kids for an hour and then you run some lessons for 1 hour a day for a week and then ta-da, everybody's good. It really begs us to ask, what is it we're doing at every single moment of the day with every single kid?
Yeah. It's the unblinking eye. You take your eye off of it, and we revert back to animal behavior. We just do. There's all kinds of research on what they call mean girls that I follow, and I'm fascinated by. And we talked about this in another podcast, but I want to get to this again. If you're an educator, you've seen this. You've seen girls by third grade start to be socially aggressive and very savvy, amazingly savvy. Your daughter comes home, and she tells you a whole bunch of little nuanced things that you never even noticed at her age, and you're kind of blown away by that. But it's not unusual in my research that girls are activated socially, aware socially, and aggressive socially early on. This is nowhere in the curriculum to deal with this. Nothing. Only Band-Aids after someone's bleeding, but nothing proactive at all. What do they do with that social power of theirs in third grade? How do we tap that social power and have them working in groups where they're actually producing something and their wonderful magnetic power is actually a good leadership tool? You know, and then we teach them how to do that without destroying each other. Do nothing to address that, and I guarantee you it will be expressed somewhere. It will be manifest somewhere, and someone's going to get destroyed. And the stakes are high. Your daughter is attacked for 3-4 weeks in third grade. She's never going to be the same again, I promise. That little confident girl you knew will never be the same. And that is what I call non-invasive brain surgery. They taught her not to believe in herself. Now, I'm not blaming the children. I'm blaming the culture that allowed that to happen. The Lord of the Flies absence of intentionality. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, but it still to me seems like this, when you're both talking about changing culture and how is that, what's the, I'm kind of a physical steps, action items, you know, so what do you do? How, I mean, like physically, do you, is your target goal to change culture and then have it trickle down? Or is your target goal to change one teacher today and have it infiltrate out and up? And how do those steps happen?
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. Both.
Yeah.
I should have known that was the answer. No, I love the answer.
It can't be a one.
I understand it. I do.
I would say this, that good things are happening in individual classrooms. And number one, first catch what's going right and reflect the story back to everyone.
Again, everyone on strengths.
Everyone knows that teacher. Everyone wanted that teacher. I had a kid tell me, this was a graduate. He told me how many times he went to the counselor to find a way to take my class again because it was the 1 hour a day that he knew he wouldn't be attacked. He didn't want to be praised, just not attacked.
Right.
Oh my God, there was a safe space. How do we make every space a safe space, including hallways? You know, that's doable. That is doable. And there are teachers who do it. I think as long as we don't think it's important, we won't do it. As long as we don't measure it, we won't do it. I promise. What we'll do is what we get measured by and what we get judged by. And right now that's test scores. So to the exclusion of everything else that might have to do, and we say self-esteem, and I say that guardedly because it was misused. Self-esteem. Everyone gets a trophy. Nothing really matters.
Okay,
I understand.
Okay.
There's bad legacy code with that. But back to that self-esteem issue. It matters that your daughter thinks she can be anything. You know what I mean? Until she tries. I guarantee she'll be nothing if she thinks she's nothing. And it's amazing, if you've ever seen a kid bullied, how fast they believe what they've been told. How fast they go from thinking they can do anything to thinking they can do nothing. It breaks your heart. And to unlearn that is almost impossible. You've got to build around it. You can't really revisit that scorched earth. So the stakes are high, I guess is what I'm saying. Action steps. Number one, awareness level. Hey, everyone, do you think this happens? Right? The other thing is personalize this. What would you want to happen for your daughter? What would you do for your daughter or your son? What would you do? Whatever that is, do it for all of them.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I understand and I love those action steps. I think the big individual thing that to tie back to basically just substantiate my own discussion earlier, back my own argument up. You know, the hardest weird kid to bully was the proud weird kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was just like,
he knew his strengths.
Exactly. And that's where that girl that actually almost thrives on the attention because of her prison. Where did prison come in? Her princess outfit. Somehow I have kindergartners in prison. The girl that thrives on that, you know, feeds off of it, embraces her weirdness. And anyway, it's the thought that constantly bounces in my head when I see someone turn out a new anti-bullying campaign, is make sure that we're teaching the weird kids to embrace that weirdness because they're really what makes us cultural and fun. And I'm admittedly, the first couple years of high school, I fell into I was okay at athletics. You know, I had the short haircut. I was kind of that kid that was the normal, you know, the after school special, typical American kid, I think. Hopefully that didn't sound egotistical. I wasn't great at anything, but.
Who the weirdos would have called a jock.
Right. And I really, through, a strange course of events, got involved in Special Olympics and kind of my sophomore year had this aha moment that the Special Olympics kids were having just a crap ton more fun in life than I was. And kind of had this epiphany about, just difference, and how much fun the people that weren't like me were. And I think you just had a weird by chance change of outward attitude towards people, I think. And really started embracing weird, probably for selfish reasons, just because it was more fun. You know, I mean, they just had more fun and diversity and, that to me was those kids who maybe some of them didn't even know if they were being bullied. I mean, some of them were at that level, or didn't outwardly represent it. I don't know that whether or not they knew. They had a serious effect on me that they embraced, at the time. The specific example was taking 2.5 minutes to run a 100-yard dash and then celebrating like it was Christmas morning when you got through the end and everybody else is already actually done with another event, you know, and they embraced it. And that's to me personally, it's the main fix for bullying. And at a minimum, I try to say that I think it's one of the, that should be incorporated.
Cody, one of the things that we used to say, and I would say we, meaning the staff, me and my students would say at my old school was, everybody is somebody else's weirdo. Get over it. And anytime a kid would come in, and usually it was a normal kid, quote, normal kid, come in and say, what do you mean by that? I would say, well, think about the most normal person you know. Is that not weird? Because who's normal like that? And then all the kids would laugh and we'd be like, okay. And that was the premise. That was the foundation where we started. And then we were able to appreciate strengths beyond just the weirdness. Because the weirdness, everybody's somebody else's weirdo. Get over it.
So what Ginger just described is, now as a teacher, you're a powerful person. What you say is true is true, mm-hmm. especially with little unindoctrinated kids. I mean, really, this scares me to some degree how powerful teachers are. What Ginger did in that one stroke there and what her staff did was make it okay to be different, and only that may be even interesting to be different and cool. Now, what you described, Cody, is a survival kit for the individual. I think both things are important. Mm-hmm. I think teaching every kid how to cope, you're going to get picked on somewhere, even outside of Ginger's culture. At the bus stop, she can't guarantee that culture. So the kid can make it on her own with a survival kit. I think it's just sad if that's all they've got, an individual survival kit, because there's a lot of kids whose parents won't give them that, and they're the ones that get a gun and go to school mm-hmm. because they can't see another solution. They don't, and what they can't see is it's ever going to get better, and they get crazy. And the research shows on brain scans, fMRI scans of bullying victims, is that when they look at pictures of someone being attacked by a shark and they look at pictures of a girl surrounded by girls attacking her socially, the brain's reaction is the same in both cases. Physical aggression and social aggression are the same to the brain, and the reaction is similar. So, again, the stakes are high. So what's important, I believe, two things, both of what you said. Ginger, at the beginning of the year, said this is the culture. This is the culture, and you won't come in here and pee in the pool of this culture mm-hmm. that we are all someone's weirdo. I love that, right? And she is too. She leads by example that she's one of those weirdos. So in here, to judge people on a simple little strand of behavior would be wrong, and she said that. She had to say that and re-say mm-hmm. it and re-say it and re-say it. And then you teach your own child. If someone says something to you, doesn't mean it's true. You know, still believe in yourself. You're going to be this wonderful thing over here. If both things go together, we can win. And right. to me, that's what this curriculum is all about, is building the local culture and the individual strength set, you know, to help the kids survive.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, great discussion. I want to take it one step further and really step off the cliff here what could be an intense discussion. Some things that we can umbrella categorize as weird, are truly things that the kid is not happy with. Does that make, there's the, I dyed my hair and I listened to this crazy music that nobody else really listens to group. Then there's something about me or things that I do that I'm actually not really happy with that draws negative attention to me as well. And to me,
I'm a fat girl.
Well, as one thing,
sure.
Absolutely.
Just one concrete example.
And how far do we go in, I'm going to take the harshest of approaches with it, and then you guys counter me with intelligence as opposed to harshness. How far do we go with saying, there's some things about you that we need to change and fix and work on to make you happy with yourself? How far do we go with that? Have I made my point? Because mm-hmm. I feel like I'm an idiot speaking over here, and I just want you guys to start talking again.
I think we have to be very careful when we put our own judgment on what needs to be fixed. Because there are teachers who have a very clear vision on what success means for all kids. when we go back to the Steve Jobs, the Einsteins, I don't think teachers would ever have pictured that as success for them. So one, we have to be careful. Anytime we say, this is something that needs to be fixed. Somebody comes to me and wants to say, but really medically, you're going to die. We need to talk about those sorts of things in reality, but to not forget our strengths that also come with that person. I know I keep going back to that, and it seems almost silly, but to only concentrate on that one thing.
No, absolutely.
So how do we minimize our weaknesses, maximize mm-hmm. our strengths, and minimize our weaknesses?
The good news is there's so many tools today that can utterly replace deficits. I have a GPS, and I love my GPS. It represents a part of my brain that God didn't give me, a directional awareness. And if you keep saying every day, Kevin, you don't know how to get anywhere, and that's all you ever tell me, stop telling me what I can't do and let me get on with what I can do. So maximizing strengths, getting her back to what she's great at. I believe that we got to meet kids on the front porch where they live. Okay, so Cody, I just met you, and you're throwing out these outward signs that I call the veneer. You've created a veneer, and you're surviving in a cast. You've created this mean anti-person because it's a protection, right? Mm-hmm. I will destroy me before you can, and I'm better at it, right? To not believe the veneer, number one. Number two, if I establish a relationship, we can start talking about your veneer, but I can't even do that until we know each other. So number one, I value you. I accept you, and I also look for your strengths. Now, I'm the only person in your life that's doing that. Now I can say, the hair, really? Do you really like the hair? No, I just started doing that because it'll, right. I just figure if I'm going to get made fun of, I might as well make my own mistakes. I get you, man. I get you. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to be? And I'm asking you. I'm not telling you, right? Where do you want to be? Well, I don't really. You know, like she said, careful not to tell the kid exactly what to be next, right? That's the worst thing you could do. So get to know the kid. It's about relationships. I think a lot of times educators, they don't mean to, but they indict kids for the condition they come to the emergency room with. Mm. You broke your leg? Why don't you sit down and think about what you did? Mm. Instead of fixing the leg, we blame them for their condition. Right. I don't know what that – I think it's an accidental byproduct of having 25 kids in a room.
Absolutely.
One person.
Absolutely.
Because nature doesn't
– culture.
I say women – you know, women don't have 25 breasts. So nature is saying something, right? One mom can handle two young kids at the same time, right? They're not the same for dogs. They have more. There's something that nature is trying to tell us. And so when you have an artificial culture that has 25 kids and one person in charge, something Ginger did with her school that I really loved is that kids assumed leadership roles, and farm families do this. Kids help raise kids, help raise kids. And what you build is a culture of continuation and not one person who's God. You know, what kind of power is that, even if it works? You know what I mean? So kids take care of each other. And to do that, you got to have a positive culture that doesn't destroy, you know, people.
Well, and to recognize in that leadership team, to recognize that everybody has a different sort of personality. So I may go to this person for leadership on this piece, but over to that person. Mm-hmm. And it's so much safer for somebody who's learning, who's exploring, who's trying things out, than to have just one teacher. If you don't get along with that one teacher, how many days have you just been screwed out of in life?
Yeah, absolutely. It's also just in the simplest of terms, it's a great division of labor. It takes away from that, because I think that teachers are forced into finding assembly line types of ways to deal with certain issues. I don't think that anyone ever got into teaching that had the intention of chewing the kid's butt for breaking his leg. I think that 99.9% of people, there's that 0.1 that just wanted the 3 months off in the summer, right? But the rest of them got into it because they wanted to help fix the leg and help the kid learn not to break his leg next time.
Absolutely.
But you're forced into this assembly line mentality that degrades the quality of production. In some instances.
The scary part about that is No Child Left Behind, you know, came along and it ramped that up to as high as it's ever been. If my kids don't make AYP, I will be in the newspaper, in the stocks, in the public square to be made fun of. It's this wise father model of policy that we know more than you, and I'm going to humiliate you if you don't have kids make these test scores. So now the only criteria I care about, I have to, for survival, is you have to do these test scores. And if I have to blame you, indict you, inflict, whatever I need to do. And kids are aware of this. They know this is going on. you know, children in a house that where a divorce is about to happen, even little ones always know it's happening. This whispers in the other room, but they know. And the whispers they hear about mom and dad, test scores, AYP, we're not going to make AYP. This class is going to get blamed for not making AYP. Special ed, you know, did their scores go in with the rest of the scores? Now we're indicting special populations because they're thrown into the aggregate. See how this wholesale focus on only one thing has hurt a lot of kids. Again, I kind of went off the map there, and I'm sorry I didn't mean to get my soapbox. But
no, it all ties in, I think.
We've got to broaden our definition of success in school, and one of them has to be to do no harm. I wrote a blog post called the Educational Hippocratic Oath. The Hippocratic Oath of Medicine is to do no harm. I won't do a surgery on you if it doesn't make you better. I won't do something to you in class if it doesn't make you better. I'm not just going to do things to you, because education is non-invasive brain surgery. I'm changing your brain when I do things to you, when you call me a teacher. And I can't undo them. The scalpel leaves permanent marks. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So we've got to step back and say, what are all the things that happen once they come to school? From the time they get on the bus, Cody, and leave your house, you're trusting me with your child. Our system, USD 448, my school district, and the minute she gets off the bus, all that time in between, that's on me. I've got to care about all that time. How she gets treated on the bus, the water fountain, bathroom, and I can mandate, but you don't mandate with preschoolers. You have to create a culture where kids know, oh, there's certain kinds of behaviors that happen, and it needs to be positive. So to me, Chicken Glass was at least starting with a narrative that they could remember and say, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Kids hang on to those. And reflecting that in the front page of their planner so they remember the narrative. Grimm's Fairy Tales, I think, were written to save the lives of many kids before they were smart enough to understand why not to play with scissors or run with scissors. They were awful, scary, terrible things, but they were useful, right? So where are the digital versions of Grimm's Fairy Tales to help kids not make the stupid mistakes before they do? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I know exactly what you mean. I want to do two things, because I've already taken about 10 minutes more of your time than I told you I would, but I'm going to do two more things. One of them is I have this kind of catch phrase thing that I do. The intention was to do it all the time when I'm on the air, and then I forgot about it, but I'm coming back to it now. And it's called the magic wand. And there's certain caveats to it, and it's my show, so I get to set the rules. If you had a magic wand and you have to pick one thing, you're allowed to say there's a whole bunch of other things that need to be done as well, but you have to pick one thing. Okay. And I want to blow it completely open. Drop the bullying thing, not necessarily, but allow for outside of that. If you, and you guys can rock, paper, scissors, you both look in deep thought, like you're trying to come up with an incredibly philosophical and deep response. If you could magic wand one thing to happen across the education system, I'll do this for you. I'll tell you what mine is, and that'll give you even more time to think. What would that one thing be? Here's my one magic wand thing. My kids are both fortunate enough to receive an IEP every year. They're in the special education system. They've both been listed as gifted, which I wish there was a different word for it, because it sounds egotistical just to say it. But my kids have both fallen into that category. And I personally think that the IEP is the one single most valuable thing they receive every year. My magic wand thing in education would be to find the funding and the manpower to give every single kid in our districts an IEP every year. Now that's coming from a completely uneducated, not involved in the system guy, but that's my educational magic wand thing that I really just told you to stall, because Ginger's actually writing notes about what she's going to say.
Well, because I was listening to you, because you're talking about gifted, which is like a big passion of mine. So I want to talk to you more about that in the gifted closet, so to speak. But of course I'm writing notes because I'm listening to you. And if I forget my thoughts, which is
absolutely. Yeah, so I diverted you instead of buying you time. My intention was to buy you time. So whichever one of you wants to go with your magic wand.
I'll go first, just because Kevin always wraps up so much nicer. I just kind of stopped talking. If I could blow up education in the system, which, by the way, we are a part of the system. You are because you're a parent. I am because I'm an educator. So to say the system, I'm talking about us as well. So if I'm going to blow it up and start from scratch, because that's what I would do with the magic wand. We can put band-aids all over things, but sometimes you just got to say, wow, we're gonna restart this paradigm again.
Absolutely.
And so what I would do that would really force a change or allow things, good things to happen across the board, everywhere I can think, is that there would be no school any larger than what the staff could handle. And by handle, I mean that every single staff member would know every single thing about that child's family, that child's environment. That's a deep knowing. That's not just knowing names and being able to recognize the parent. It's to have a good conversation to know the kid. So I've ballparked this because I've thought about this a couple of days or 12, 19 years. That I think that our elementary schools, we're probably looking, and if I'm talking K-4, what, 50 kids? If we're talking middle school, maybe 100 kids. So that's maybe five, six through eight, depending on what your model is with that. High school? I think high school should be really, really individualized because that's where their last jumping off point is to life. And I want school to practice life as closely as it possibly can. So I'm thinking our high schools, knowing that I graduated from a school that had 1,500, 1,600 kids in it, I'm saying our high school should not have any more than 100 kids, 9-12, period. Any bigger than that, it becomes a factory. It becomes that model. It becomes that assembly line. It isn't individualized. It isn't looking at kids as humans. It's looking at them as product and what we're manufacturing. And that's not what's good for our world.
Okay. I'm trying to bring everybody together here. The first thing that you described with the IEP, Cody, was really what Ginger's getting to, in that smaller numbers mean that we can know kids. An IEP really is a close assessment of who your daughter or your son is and what they might need. All it is individual attention. That's what you're really asking for. Ginger's talking about it as a macro culture. A school shouldn't be bigger than 100. I like her numbers because the research that I've done on chickens, and I do a lot of this for the chicken classes, is that certain behaviors happen at certain number milestones. At 100 chickens, pecking order breaks down. There are too many chickens at the top, therefore they start killing each other. I swear, I looked at nature for instructive, you know, ideas about how we act, because we are at our core animals in a way. I also go back to nature to look at size. Now, as she talked about macro, I'm going to go to micro. How many kids can you raise to effective, healthy adulthood if there was no school and you were just home? Would it be 25? And if it wouldn't, what would the number be? And I think it's 5. I think that we are going against nature. Behaviorist science and Dewey at the very beginning convincing people that one person could effectively help and teach 25 was really a lie and should have been adjusted. We'll never have the money to do this. But really, one teacher with no more than 10 kids and even a para, so she could go deep on the ones she's not working with, so they get the individual. Look, go back to nature. What would a family do? What I love is my default position, the thing I think is true, keep going back to what would have happened if there wasn't compulsion schooling. What would you do at home if you really cared about your kids? You'd take them out on field trips. You'd show them the world. Not 25. That's a birthday party day, and you survive those, but not every day. You wouldn't do that every day, but we do that every day in public school. So I think the cool thing is we can. I think you keep going back to nature. What's nature trying to tell us? The best small communities are small communities. When we go to that factory model, certain things happen because humans are humans, and you can't fight that. So smaller class size would what I'd say. And then everything you said, individualized attention, a smaller school overall, a better, more positive community. It's so hard to get all these things we talked about when you do huge numbers. It's just hard. One more thing that we haven't talked about is bullies don't grow out of it. They come to work. You work with some. This issue matters to adults, too. We all know that bully at work. They don't change. So to me, we got to start attacking this earlier, talking about it. We are what we don't say this, but we are default family in education. We are really moms and dads while mom and dad are working. We should be. And that means to know the family, to know what they might want, to represent them for their kid, at least to know who they are, where they come from.
To be a part of that family, to have that family a part of us. One of the biggest compliments I've ever had as an educator is when a parent said, I like having my kid have another mom at school.
Yeah, and that wasn't a threat. That wasn't a threat because they recognize that value. And we're not trying to steal their parenthood. We're not. Mm-hmm. But since we do have them in custodial care for more hours, we spend more contact hours with your kids than you do. Shouldn't we at least talk to you about what you might want? You know what I mean? That's a customized education, and that's smaller numbers, more attention.
And when we're in those smaller numbers, that doesn't automatically mean, because I hear it from out in the web land, well, if you're in a small school, you don't have the same opportunities as if you have a big school. And with the use of technology, that just ain't so anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. I think that there's pros and cons of both if you're going to sit down and make a list, but that individual attention is kind of neat, I guess. I feel good about my answer because it kind of tied in with your guys' answer.
It was the same.
That individual attention. I've just seen my kids' eyes kind of light up in an IEP when for that moment, and, you know, in high school now it's only once a year with my daughter for a two-hour time frame, but at that moment there's, over the course of the whole IEP, 9 or 10 adults that have taken the time to focus all of their attention on that one kid in the room. It's like flipped around. There's a group of adults caring about one student instead of an adult that's trying to care about 25 at the same time.
Nice.
It dawned on me at my daughter's last IEP that every single kid should get this opportunity. It should have zero basis on. And it's not every time I say things that I think should change, I worry about teachers are going to think that I'm saying that's not the case. It's the system that dictates this assembly line mentality. But
we are the system. Don't ever forget it.
No one else can change it but us.
Ginger yells at me every time I use
this. We are the system. Well, I said that once and somebody said, you know, we're the system. I said, oh, man, that's so right.
That's good.
So we have the power.
Good stuff. Write it down. Copyright.
So you want a revolution?
The last thing that I want to do is people are going to watch this and people are going to want more of you two. And I promise that normally when I don't plan my guests out 15 seconds before we go live, I put some stuff and I will follow back up. Tell me how people can contact, listen to your broadcast to the world. Tell me those things real quick. Twitter handles, websites, cut loose. And don't get crazy and egotistical and tell me. I want to know these things. I'm asking you as the guy whose name's on the show.
I'm pretty much everywhere. Ginger Lumen, LEWMAN, like Newman only with an L, gingerlumen.org. On Twitter, I'm Ginger Lumen. On Facebook, I use it educationally. So if there's anybody who is a parent or an educator, please let's connect because my brain is better because I use others' brains. And gingerlumen.org is best place to central.
I'm kevinhoneycutt.org, HoneyCutt.org, and same thing on Twitter, same thing on across all networks. And Ginger and I work together, a lot of research together, so one of us is like, we're a two-piece set in many ways. So if you want to talk to me or talk to her, I'd love to talk, especially if you want to do something. I mean, really do something. Because we're getting to the age now where I don't want to talk anymore. I don't want to play like we're doing something. If you've got a Petri dish and you want to make real change happen, that's where we want to be.
Kevin's amazing strength is inspiring people. He talks to educators and they're like, I want to do that. I think my strength comes from that practitioner point of view is, Kevin, that makes you want to do it. I'll help you figure out how to do it on an everyday basis. Mm-hmm. Slogging, looking the kids in the face, everyday moment.
Yeah, that's a very good description.
Well, I'm super excited that this worked out this way. Both of you guys have been, and it's a weird combination of I'm a marketing person that in some strange way has gotten involved in some educational things. But both of you guys, and I think passion is the word that describes it the most. There's all kinds of success stories that you both have. In my opinion, it all goes back to you were able to pull them off because of a passion. I don't think that Kevin was born to be an incredible inspiration on the stage as a speaker. I don't think anyone was really born to be anything. I think people find a passion and then they get really good at it. And hopefully by me saying you weren't born, you didn't take that as you were born to do something else and should follow a different path.
It's cool how you worry about things.
I was thinking that too. Well, he must have been hit by some people saying, really?
It really derives from me not being an expert at anything. So when I start voicing my opinion, I feel like I have to asterisk it so that people understand that I don't really claim to know what I'm talking about. I just talk. And Ginger, I think your passion on getting in the trenches and actually making things happen. Both of you really do that so well, and you see, I see Kevin speak to 5,000 people on a video, and then the next minute he's at Center High School talking to one kid about their project. And the same things that you're doing, Ginger, of having this philosophy, and both of you say a lot of things that could be taken as pie in the sky. It's never going to happen. Right. But then if you pay attention to the both of you, you're in the trenches, getting your hands dirty, making it happen. So I like that, because a lot of people just,
nice
talk
thing
to talk.
Said to me in a long time.
I know.
It took me a long time to come up with something good. I was on the spot. No. Thank you very much. I think an incredible conversation, and not just because it was on my show. I've wanted to have both of you on for a long time, and it's just never, I don't know what, no excuses. I haven't gotten it done.
Rarely are we ever in the office together anyway, so this is fortuitous today.
What a gigantic piece of karma that you were both sitting in the room.
Wait for it. Karma.
Karma was where I was going all along.
Now he's tapering off.
Peace was the word that didn't exactly fit. Karma was where I was headed, and peace wasn't the right bridge to get to karma, all right? Anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. I will make an effort. I want to have you guys back on, because I think it was a phenomenal conversation. And the fact that we recorded it, I think some people can be inspired or educated or maybe outraged and get involved in the conversation or anything from the conversation that you guys had today. So thanks for joining us. I will have links up to all their stuff again. Through a mishap, I was a little unorganized getting the show going this morning. But right below this, if you're watching it archived in about 5 minutes, there will be links to their websites at a minimum, where I'm sure you can find any number of ways to contact them. So thank you guys very much. And we will see y'all Sunday. Hopefully you'll join the show Sunday, 7 a.m. live. And we record that one as well, so you don't have to get up at 7. Thanks.